is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch the team that bounced your team then absolutely lay an egg in the next round of the playoffs because you can't help but feel, man, we got deprived of watching a third meeting between two teams who had two of the five best regular season games in the NFL this season, the Seahawks and the 49ers. And instead, we got to watch that. An absolute stomping that was administered by the San Francisco 49ers. And I don't know if the Seahawks would have won. I know that it wouldn't have looked like that, though. It would not have looked like that.
The NFL doesn't work this way, Danny, but if the Seahawks and Packers were to play each other 10 times, who wins?
It's a great question. Do you put the Seahawks at full strength? Because that's looming in the background, is that Seattle was injury-riddled.
Let's not put them at full strength. How about this version of the Seahawks at the end of the year, down to Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer at running back with some injuries on the offensive line, injuries in other spots as well. This version of the Seahawks versus this version of the Packers. 10 times, who's winning the most?
The way this team played this year, 50-50. I felt if you put that game in Green Bay and you have the same circumstances where Seattle's played in the wild card round, I think it's 50-50 that they end up beating the Packers.
I think it's they win six, the Seahawks, and I think the Packers win four. I think that first half was such an anomaly, and I know that we've seen the Seahawks struggle in the first half often, but I mean that's why Green Bay won that game, is because they got off to such a good start and because the Seahawks offense couldn't get anything done in the first half. I just don't see that happening several times in the matchup between these two teams if they were to play it like it's an NBA series, because I just don't think this Packers defense is that good, especially against the run. That's the worst part of all, Danny. You know, we've been criticizing the Seahawks for their approach in that conference championship game. Sadly, it was the right approach. It's just that the 49ers are a lot better with the way that they designed their running offense.
That's something that I want to get into over the course of the show, and we're definitely going to ask Brock about it. San Francisco threw the ball 8 times.
Eight?
In one. They attempted 8 passes. A guy named something named Raheem Mostert, who was on 7 different teams, is an NFL afterthought, a guy who deserves a lot of credit for persevering and building an NFL career, rushed for a franchise record, not just in playoff games, but any single game, going over 200 yards in that game. And he's faster than anybody Seattle had, that's for sure. Is it just a matter that Seattle didn't have the personnel? Is it something about the scheme? Because that 49ers run game certainly looked significantly different. The other part I realized is that as frustrating as it is and has been to watch Seattle play against Aaron Rodgers, rooting for him is even worse. It was rooting for Rodgers to perform well in that game. I hated myself while I was doing it. And finally, by the second quarter, I was just like, okay, I have to roll with this, and I have to enjoy watching Aaron Rodgers be pantsed in front of the entire nation with no Mike McCarthy to hide behind. No question about, like, is Rodgers being wasted? Is his prime? Are they being? He was, I don't care what the final stats said, he was awful in the first half. The reason they're down 27-0 is because Aaron Rodgers was terrible.
Garbage time is a great time to pile up statistics, and that's what Aaron Rodgers did. It was a Mitchell Trubisky-esque effort.
Did you look at the final stats?
I did. They're very impressive.
31 for 36 for 326 yards. He had 2 interceptions, but one of those was a heave at the end of the game.
Right.
And I had to look back. I was like, and I look back at the first half stats, and that's where it is he was 9 of 12 passing for 65 yards.
This is what?
65 yards passing.
Fantasy football is ruining America because you can look at those numbers at the end of the game, and you can try to convince yourself that Aaron Rodgers was actually competent in this one. He was awful in the first half. He really was. He just seemed unaware of the 49ers pass rush, and yeah, his completion percentage was high, but I mean it was a Trubisky-esque effort in the first half. Second half he was able to clean it up a little bit, pile on some of those statistics, but if the Green Bay Packers are going to be back in this same situation next year, they're going to need Aaron Rodgers to be better, because I just don't think that they can win a playoff game the way that Rodgers played yesterday next year.
Let's keep this focused on Seattle and ask this question. Do you feel better or worse about the Seahawks given what happened yesterday?
Worse.
Do you feel better or worse? Do you feel worse because of how they played against Green Bay?
They should have been in the NFC Championship game. I felt that going into that game against the Packers. I felt that after the game against the Packers. And now even more so, I feel that way. This 49er team completely owned Green Bay like they had earlier this year. And given what we had seen between the Seahawks and 49ers this season, you should believe that the Seahawks and 49ers would have played yet another classic yesterday. Instead, we had to sit back and watch this Packers team that, yeah, from a pass defense might be pretty good, but that has no ability to stop the run, give up almost, what, 300 yards rushing or so, only get beat by a team that threw the football 8 times. And we saw Aaron Rodgers, this prince that supposedly was back after torching the Seahawks defense, look exactly like he has looked all season long, which is just like a shadow of himself.
Could you imagine in the first half that at some point Joey Bosa was just going to reach down, grab him by the back of his jersey, lift him up and go, "Is this y'all king?" A la Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther. Is this him? Is this your king that was there? I felt better about the Seahawks. I did. I felt better about the Seahawks, and here's why. We've seen them play that 49ers team, and San Francisco's healthier now, and it's possible they're a buzzsaw that tears Seattle up. I don't think so, though. We've seen that Seattle team, and they're able to scrap. They can stay in a game against anybody, and I think that that's a trait that we shouldn't overlook, that they've been able to stay in a game against anybody this season, and they played the best teams in the league, and they were every bit the measure of San Francisco, and every San Francisco fan I knew, which is unfortunately quite a few because the regrettable strain of the species known as Niner fans tended to populate around my height. I asked every one of them after that divisional playoff game, it was like, "You guys are relieved, right? You get to play Green Bay." And every one of them was like, "Yeah. Yeah, I'm very confident about Green Bay." You never know. Seattle's got an ability, and there are flaws and there are faults to point at with that team, there's a question about whether they get the most out of their quarterback that they could. The one thing you can't doubt, though, is their ability to hang in games. And you never see a Seattle team. I've seen a Seattle team basically twice since Russell Wilson became quarterback. I've seen a Seattle team look like the Packers did exactly twice. Regular season, postseason, where it's just soup to nuts. They were walked out back, and absolutely the other team had their way with them. It was versus the Rams and at Green Bay. At Green Bay 2016 versus the Rams 2017. That's it. That's the only times that I've seen those moments where it's like, yeah, okay, they're just outclassed. I think that's something. I do feel good about this team going forward because of that.
Well, that's why I so much enjoy having come here to cover this team, is that that doesn't happen to them. And there's only one other team that over the last 20 years has gone about things that same way. I mean, you rarely see the Patriots just get their butts kicked. And from that perspective, that's a great thing to build off of. But at the same time, you're going to have to, this coming season, you're going to have to find ways to hide some of those weaknesses that can be easily exploited early on in games, so you don't find yourself having to come back and crawl back into these games like you're, the Terminator at the end of Terminator 1, just like crawling with one arm slowly towards Sarah Connor, who's not Sarah Connor in Terminator 2 at this point in the movies.
I'll say this. The one thing about is Arnold Schwarzenegger's dogged pursuit in Terminator 1 is what was responsible for him eventually becoming a good guy.
Yeah.
Because as much as we resented him, that perseverance was absolutely went with it.
I'll be back.
Also, I'm grateful. I'm very grateful that we don't have a quarterback who talks like Aaron Rodgers did after that game in cut number one, who says there's a lot of things, and some people don't exactly find Russell illuminating in the answers he gives, but he never sounds quite like this.
Aaron, speak up, please.
The beauty in this sport is it is a true team sport. You're relying on so many other people. As we move into the offseason now, the reliance is on guys doing their responsibilities, doing their part to be ready for next season. And who knows what can happen. It's a long year, but this one will always be special because it became fun again.
Oh, thank goodness. He found a smile. Oh, yes, even in the wake of defeat, he will find a way to cast aspersions, whether it's on Mike McCarthy or the fact that it just wasn't fun for him anymore. Oh, I'm so glad it's fun for you, Aaron.
You made the superhero reference a little bit ago with Aaron Rodgers, "Is this your king?" For me, it's the same thing. I'm going to use a little Bane here from The Dark Knight Rises. "You have been supplied with a false idol." that is what Aaron Rodgers is. He is no longer the demigod that a lot of people would like to paint him out to be. I mean, this is a guy that you look at and you just do not get that same pizzazz or whatever it is that you once did. And this is just so on brand for him. Just taking the subtle little shot at somebody else.
It's fun again.
He legitimately has no way to blame him for this game. And yet, there he is. There he is doing it. Oh, well, football just wasn't fun last year. Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's not fun for 31 other teams in the NFL every single year. So for the Kansas City Chiefs, for the San Francisco 49ers, this was not a fun year. I can't stand it. It is so on brand for him. And I suppose if there is one thing to take away from this game and have a little bit of enjoyment in, I guess this was it.
It's Danny and Gallant. I want to remind you that our playoff coverage is brought to you by the Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. And right now it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dublin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Washington Huskies, 16-point second-half lead against the Oregon Ducks, the negligible Ducks. What happens? The Pritchard kid ends up breaking their heart at the end with the Steph Curry range three-pointer. As good as Isaiah Stewart was and is, certainly feels like the Huskies are in the midst of that one-and-done talent not remotely paying off. Their next game is against Utah on Thursday. There's still time. At this point, they're going to have to hustle just to make the NCAA tournament. That is an uphill climb. At this point, they've lost three of their last four Pac-12 games.
That's going to be really hard for them to do. And that's the big problem right now is who else do you have to turn to on this team from these young players? Isaiah Stewart, unfortunately, is a big man. He can't really control how much of an impact he has on the game. And by the way, he was awesome. He was absolutely awesome on Saturday. I mean, he does everything. He even makes free throws for you. The unfortunate thing is, the first half of this game, I remember thinking to myself, man, Washington is just so much more athletically gifted than this Oregon squad. It's not even close. These like are two teams playing two different sports, and yet they weren't able to hold on to, what, a 12-point halftime lead? And this Peyton Pritchard guy, I mean, gotta give him credit. That guy's a really good player. He was bombing it from basically like 6-7 feet outside the three-point line. There's only so much you can do against something like that. But, come on. You had a 12-point lead. Just because the guy's hitting shots from all over the court, I mean, that doesn't mean that you should be blowing a lead like that.
What to watch for?
Well, if you paid $60 or so for this pay-per-view, I'm sorry. This was not the kind of event that you paid for, because in 40 seconds, Conor McGregor won his first fight in the MMA realm in more than 3 years, defeating Donald Cerrone by basically using his shoulder to knock him out. It was very impressive.
He kicked him in his head. The shoulder strikes came a little bit earlier, and then he kicked him in his head.
I was really impressed by the shoulder strikes. I've never seen someone beat up somebody else using his collarbone.
He caught him leaning. I was one of those people that paid for the fight. I was totally satisfied. Conor McGregor's really fun. I don't like the direction his career has taken. He's now put himself in a position where he's going to have a big-name fight coming next, whether that's against Khabib Nurmagomedov or who it is. Cerrone's a slow starter. This was kind of a custom-made fight for Conor, but he made the fight. He knocked the dude out. Head kicks are awesome.
Yeah, and he got him right in the jaw on that one, too.
Kicked him right in his head. Kicked his head clean off.
I, you know what? I didn't like that Cerrone put his cowboy hat back on after he lost. You lost. You can't put the cowboy hat back on. I'm sorry.
I think he's defrocked at that point.
Yes, you can't. You can never wear the cowboy hat again. It's over.
What to watch for?
Got your Super Bowl set. Kansas City Chiefs making their first appearance there in 50 years. They're going to be taking on the San Francisco 49ers. The Chiefs are already an early favorite. This should be an incredibly exciting Super Bowl. It's a bit of a bummer, certainly, that Seattle's not there, and it'll be hard to... But, man, that's a great matchup. I expect both teams to score in the 30s.
Who are you happiest for in this game? Because for me, I'm happiest that Andy Reid is finally getting another shot back in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm really happy. You know, I'm excited to see Mahomes, and it's not even I'm happy for him. Mahomes is a really fun player to watch.
He is incredible. That touchdown scramble that he had against Tennessee, which was essentially the backbreaker, so amazing.
He wagged his tongue. He went Jordan in the middle of the run.
He did? Wait, I didn't see that.
Yes, it was on one of the replays I saw, or maybe it was a different replay where he was running, but there's one where he wags his tongue on the way in. It's really
amazing.
That
is amazing.
That is what to watch for. We now bring in the professor to talk about that Super Bowl matchup, our morning drive with John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, is Patrick Mahomes the best quarterback in the game right now?
Yes.
Is it even close? Who is even close at number two?
Russell Wilson. I mean, then you have to still say Aaron Rodgers, and you put Lamar Jackson up there, you know, Drew Brees. But because, again, you can see that he can do everything. He can run. He can throw. He's smart. He's a great leader. He's got everything. And certainly, he's going to the Super Bowl for the first time. It's not going to be his last time. He's got Andy Reid right now in a position to get all those critics off his back that he's been the best coach that's never been and never won a Super Bowl. I mean, I think this was a great one, and again, very predictable to see that he would win this game and outscore the Tennessee Titans.
John, the fact that the two defensive plays that clinched each game came from former Seahawks. Frank Clark has the sack of Ryan Tannehill. Richard Sherman has the interception. Now, granted, Sherman's interception came after he was beat deep for a touchdown. I couldn't help but feel a little bit of pang of, man, Seattle's defense held him back, and here are two guys that had been on their defense in the past still playing.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that is true because, I mean, you can see because, you know, with Jadeveon Clowney being able to be a disruptive force, could you imagine what it would have been like if there were a way to keep Frank Clark there and have him on the other side? Because that's exactly what they need, is that quick twitch type of guy that can get around a tackle and get to the quarterback, because, you know, you can set it up with Clowney to get the double teams and all that stuff. And then, of course, I mean, you know, it wasn't a great year for Richard Sherman. I mean, for certainly Trey Flowers, but it was a fantastic year for Richard Sherman. And, you know, it does well. But, yeah, I guess there is a sense of irony there that two of the mainstays on each of those two defenses are former Seahawks.
Do you think Kansas City's defense, which I got to give a lot of credit because I was down talking it all week long, what they did against Tennessee is something that they can do against this 49ers rushing attack and some balance that they have from Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're going to be able to totally contain them because they're better, and that's why from their last meeting when they played Tennessee and they lost 34-30 or whatever the score was, that they have gotten better, and I think you can see it. But I mean, this is a game. I think the over and under is going to be 52 during the regular season. The scoring was 46.5. I mean, this is going to be a game that's going to be scoring because, you know, defensively both teams have some challenges. You know, San Francisco still has some difficulty stopping running teams. That doesn't hurt in this game because the Chiefs aren't a running team, but of course, you can still pass the ball on them. And, of course, the Chiefs still are better against the run than they have been in the past. And so, no, I think this is going to be a great matchup. But defensively, I mean, the Chiefs are better than people perceive. They're still not good, though, but they're still better.
All right, John, franchise quarterback news. First of all, Philip Rivers has moved from San Diego to Miami. Does that mean it's almost certain that he's not back with the Chargers?
Pretty sure, yeah. It's not as definitive. I mean, it's a little more definitive than, say, Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady went on Westwood yesterday and still has the door open to go back to New England, but it looks like he's going to go. But here's an interesting one to kind of follow, because I think most people think that he could end up going, Philip, to Indianapolis to get together with Frank Reich. I'll add another team, Tampa Bay. Because Bruce Arians seems to be thinking, you know what, if I don't have Jameis Winston back, it wouldn't be bad to dip into Florida now that Phillip's there and bring him over like they did with they made the Chris Carson trade with the Arizona Cardinals. Because that could be another option right now for Phillip. But yeah, I think the fact that he's moved the entire family, all nine kids, out of Los Angeles, you know, out of San Diego, I think he's gone.
What percentage of a chance is it that Derrick Henry has played his last down for the Tennessee Titans?
I'd say zero. I mean, because they can still franchise him if they want to. And because they're not going to let him go. I mean, he's the key, kind of like in Dallas, Ezekiel Elliott's the key for their offense. And so they can't let him go, but they can't franchise him. But still, to keep him, you know, they've got to pay him $13 or $14 million a year.
It's interesting, John, because I think you're right. I do think they'll keep him. I do think that the comparison will be Ezekiel Elliott. But if you look in Dallas, don't you sit there and wonder, like, man, it was an awful lot of money. And some people will tell you statistically that the Cowboys were better or as good when Pollard was on the field for them as they were when Ezekiel Elliott was.
Yeah, but I don't think you can rationalize that because, I mean, the difference between those two backs is still vast. And let's put it this way. Even with Pollard, with Ezekiel Elliott, they just didn't get enough good coaching. I mean, that's why they're so average at 8-8, and that's why Jason Garrett's out and Mike McCarthy's in. Remember, they got 14 to 15 players who have been to Pro Bowls on that team, but you know, to try to rationalize that they're just as good as Tony Pollard, I mean, please, not right.
Aaron Rodgers after the game said, quote, "The window is open for us, and that's the exciting thing," before throwing some passive-aggressive shade at the lack of fun that he was having in Green Bay perhaps the season before. Is that window really that open, John? If I were to give you a number, over, under, 1.5 NFC championship appearances for Aaron Rodgers going forward, where would you land, over or under?
And what the number is, 1 or 2?
1.5.
So I'd say under. I still think, I mean, the window is still open because Aaron Rodgers is there, and you can see that, you know, they made good moves in free agency to get two pass rushers, a safety, and a guard. I mean, they did a great job in that regard, but, you know, still windows close when quarterbacks get out, and Aaron's still there. So the window is still there, but I don't think it's one where, you know, they're going to be dominant enough to get to two Super Bowls or anything like that. I mean, they'll be in the playoff mix next year. If they're so as fortunate, you know, maybe they'll get a home game or two. That's why Seattle's got to try to move up and start claiming some home games to get things right if they want to get back to the Super Bowl. But no, I don't think the window's closed. It's just not open for a lot.
Professor, you want to hear a fun stat about the Packers in sure. NFC Championship games? Mm-hmm. So you remember halftime of the 2014 NFC Championship game, the one here in Seattle, they were ahead 16-0. Over the next 8 quarters, so the second half and overtime against Seattle, the game against Atlanta, which they lost 44-21, and then the first half of the San Francisco game.
Mm-hmm.
So over the next 8 quarters, they were outscored 93-27.
Wow.
They just got smashed. And then you combine with how they looked against San Francisco, saying, like, if you play that game between Green Bay and San Francisco 10 times, I think San Francisco's winning 9 of them.
Oh, I would agree, yeah. I mean, San Francisco's a better team. I think that's pretty evident. And now Green Bay's got to try to get better with their general manager. And their first-year coach will be now into a second year. He'll be a little bit better. But, hey, no, I think the advantage is – well, let's put it this way. The look at this division right now and how good it is in the NFC West. I mean, you got San Francisco. Rams are still kind of hanging around. You know, Seattle's going to try to get better. And then Arizona's not going to be as bad as they were this year. And so, yeah, it's good. But, yeah, Green Bay is good, but they're going to have to really try to catch up right now to the 49ers.
Darrelle Revis and Richard Sherman had a back and forth last night on Twitter. And Darrelle Revis, for whatever reason, decided to insert himself into the conversation, saying that Sherman has a fear of getting beat in man-to-man coverage. What did you make of Revis's comments? And if you look back at both of these two players' careers, who would you say has had the better one?
Well, that's the thing that's so strange is that, I mean, Revis is great and Richard Sherman's great. I mean, there's two Hall of Fame cornerbacks. But, you know, the system that works so well for Sherman is being cover one, cover three, and just kind of mirroring the guy. Not necessarily doing what Revis did, and it's a completely different thing. And so, you know, particularly at the age of 31, you know, I don't know if the speed's there for Richard to try to just mirror, say, Devontae Freeman. I know that they put him occasionally on the other side, but I didn't understand where Revis is coming from trying to criticize, you know, a different type of system, a different type of style. Both styles work, and except for the 60-some yard pass that was completed on Sherman, nobody throws at him. I mean, he just, you know, he's that good. So it's like I thought it was a little unfair because, you know, you saw the way and how quickly Revis's career ended when he started having trouble coverage problems in his early 30s. I mean, Richard's still going great.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We look forward to catching up with you tomorrow on our morning drive.
Okay, sounds good.
That is John Clayton. You can hear him right after us, 10 to noon, 710 ESPN Seattle, and then in the afternoon with Bob, Dave, and more. Coming up next, we're going to take a list of the things that the Seahawks learned from this weekend. Paul's going to have our guide through that next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I felt like I was saying, say it ain't so to myself as I watched the NFC Championship weekend. You see the San Francisco 49ers. You see the Green Bay Packers. You don't see the Seattle Seahawks. And you also, on the other side of things, saw a team that's basically entirely powered by their quarterback in the Kansas City Chiefs taking down the AFC crown. But it's one of those weekends, Danny, where as you sit back and you watch, you realize that maybe there are some things that the Seahawks can take away from this game and apply to themselves. And I do wonder, first off, about the speed that Kansas City has offensively. Is that something that Seattle, overnight, can capture the same way Kansas City has?
You asked this question last night, and my initial reaction was, is it speed that's missing for Seattle? Is that the one factor? And it might be. But I was like, DK Metcalf's really fast. Tyler Lockett is one of the league's better deep threats. I don't think their running backs stand out for being particularly fast, but Chris Carson's fast enough. Like, I don't think of him as a plotter. And Rashad Penny certainly has his. There's nobody that's bigger than Penny that's faster than him, and he's faster than anyone who's bigger than him. I think he's got a pretty unique combination there. And I thought Homer had some good. Is that what they're missing? I'm not saying you're wrong. I wondered, is that the attribute that they're really missing?
It feels that there's a different level of speed that Kansas City has, and maybe it's just completely unachievable. Maybe because they have a super athletic tight end, the most athletic tight end in the NFL, in Travis Kelce, in addition to having a guy like Tyreek Hill, who is the fastest player that I think I've ever watched. I also think when you take a look at Sammy Watkins, you're talking about a former top 10 pick. And then after that, you got a Mecole Hardman, who first-round pick, just as fast perhaps as a Sammy Watkins, at least on the same playing field as a Tyreek Hill, because they have him returning kicks. They don't really have Tyreek returning kicks every single time. They are on another level of speed, and you wonder, when you've got a mobile quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, who, by the way, is a lot more similar to Russell Wilson on that front than we maybe would have believed going into these playoffs, because these last two games, he has been stupendous as a runner. I think that having a scrambling quarterback that also can wing it to fast wide receivers, man, that just sets you apart. Kansas City doesn't even have to run the football. That is, for all the analytic goons of Seahawk Twitter, they loved what they were seeing from Kansas City yesterday.
Not only that, but then San Francisco doesn't have to throw the football at all, and in large part, but that's because of a running game where I do think Mostert looks faster. Like I think that's a compliment to the system, and we can talk about the lessons to be drawn from that one in a little bit. I do find myself intrigued by that. What do you take away from the Kansas City game? Is that the template you try to follow? Tyreek Hill is the fastest player in the league. It's also, he's tough to talk about as, do you want to emulate that? Because the reason that Kansas City was able to draft him where they did, and the reason they're paying him what he's being paid on the extension, is because his value's been significant. I hate using the word value. Is because he has the baggage of having a really ugly incident of domestic violence during his time in college that made many people disqualify him from being, even considering employing him. And then there was at least a suspicion that he may have abused a child that
right.
preceded, and he hasn't been disciplined for it. And honestly, I don't think there's been enough evidence to warrant him being disciplined for it. But at the very least, he accepted a well below market contract extension in part because of the uncertainty that has been imposed by some really heinous allegations, not even allegations. One is an actual incident that happened while he was in college. So that kind of hangs in the background of, would you want a player as fast as Tyreek Hill? Everybody in the NFL would. But as fast as Tyreek Hill is, there's a lot of people that said no thank you to him because of who he was.
Would you be opposed to the Seahawks? And let's forget someone like Tyreek Hill, but say there is a project kind of wide receiver or running back who's got all the speed in the world, but he ends up falling to you at the back of the first round. He's in the second round available to you. Do you take a flyer on that guy with the hope that you can maybe mold him into someone that fits in this offense and allows the Seahawks to be some light version of Kansas City's offense? Or do you say, we got to prioritize on our defense, we got to prioritize on our offensive line?
I'm not prioritizing on the offensive line. I've already said I just accept that it's going to be crappy. Because no matter what you do, no matter how many times you pick a guy in the first round, if you can get an exceptionally fast player and have him rush the passer, I'm all for it. I only want defensive players chosen.
Only defensive players chosen.
And I'm only being partly facetious. They need guys on defense. Their defense is what I think is missing speed. Their offense, I don't find myself believing that the thing that's holding this team back is the speed they have on offense. I believe if anywhere is lacking in speed, it's their defense.
I think that's a great point. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle, as we take a look back at conference championship weekend. What are some things that the Seahawks can take away from it? And by the way, our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. When we look at other things that took place on conference championship week, I think it's also important to note what the 49ers did with a guy who has been cut by seven teams. Raheem Mostert, 14 carries for 160 yards in the first half. That's the most in the NFL or American Football League since 1963. He had 29 for 224 touchdowns at the end of the game. By the way, San Francisco also had another game earlier this year where a running back had four touchdowns. It was Tevin Coleman, not Raheem Mostert in that version. Remember this, and also take a look at the AFC side of things. Sean Alexander was the last NFL rushing leader to make a Super Bowl. There are a lot of factors at play right now that you could make the argument that you just don't need to have that big buck running back. And I like having a guy like a Derrick Henry or an Ezekiel Elliott, and I do think that they are worth it. But you're being shown across the NFL, you don't necessarily need to have that. What you do need is to jazz up the way that you run the football. And you have to wonder if Seattle was a little bit more creative with the way that they designed their running offense. Maybe it's unattainable because of what Kyle Shanahan was able to do yesterday. It just seems like it's just done in a very smart and ingenuitive fashion. But Brian Schottenheimer's got to see some of that stuff and say, you know what, I need to take some of this and I need to make it a part of my offense. Because you should be able to do the same things that the 49ers did to the Packers, even with a Marshawn Lynch or a Travis Homer. Because that Packers run defense stinks. It just is not good.
I'm interested to talk to Brock, and Brock Huert will be in for Blue 42, because I want to ask him exactly that. Is the 49ers run game as creative? Is it different than Seattle's? Because my eyes certainly tell me yes. And the answer to your question about is it worth it to have that big name running back, my answer is no. If I'm the Titans, I'm not paying Derrick Henry. I might do a franchise tag because that's a one-year investment, and the question of who are you going to give that money to if you don't give it to him, I'm not giving him a big-budget Ezekiel Elliott-type deal. I think it's a waste. If I was the Seahawks, I would not pay Chris Carson an extension. I think they will, and I'm not going to say that their rationale is wrong because that's how they're building their team, and I think you have to show your team that you put value into players and not treat them as disposable. But if it was me, no. I would absolutely take the approach. I think the 49ers just showed you, and Kyle Shanahan following in the footsteps of his dad, which is that you can find a running back who fits your scheme rather than find the running back and then build your team around it.
I'm with you on that, and we'll see again what the Seahawks do this offseason. I think with Chris Carson having the hip injury, maybe they think they can get a discount. So the first two lessons, get more speed on offense maybe. Danny, you would like more speed on defense. I'm with you there. Number two, be more creative with the way that you run the football. And here's my third one. I'm not sure how effective this was, especially when you look at Devontae Adams' stats at the end of the game. But Richard Sherman did follow Devontae Adams around, which is something that I don't think we would have seen from Richard Sherman with the Seattle Seahawks. At the very least, San Francisco tried to move their best corner with the best wide receiver on the field. You should have tried that against the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship game. Shaquille Griffin versus Trey Flowers. There's a clear discrepancy between the two of them. Why not give Shaq a couple of opportunities there?
Yeah, certainly that is part. I believe that the Green Bay Packers targeted Trey Flowers with Devontae Adams and moved him to get that matchup. And I think it turned out to be a game breaker in many ways.
Do you think that's something that Pete Carroll, Ken Norton Jr., they will consider adding on to their defense this offseason, just given what happened?
Yes, I think that you have to look at that. You absolutely have to look at it.
He is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. There are a couple of things per Danny that must be changed immediately in the NFL. One of them, it's fairly easy fix. The other, a pipe dream. Danny thinks they're both equally important. He'll explain why next. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
There are two things that I think need to change in the NFL right away. The first of which I think is pretty simple, and I plan to have Jim Nantz testify on behalf of this change. And a weird thing happened as I went to find the audio of Nantz complaining about what I'm going to lay out, and it was missing from the replay version on NFL Game Pass. Yeah, like honestly, like because there was the interception. It was ruled an interception by Kansas City in the first quarter, and they go to a replay review, and as they go to the review, Gene Steratore is saying, oh, looks like the ball bounced. They come back from commercial, and this is standard this year. Well, the Titans have the ball back. And then they announce that Tony Corrente and Nantz, I swear, and maybe I'm hearing things, but Nantz, I can swear, made a reference to, hopefully we'll get this ironed out and you'll hear the announcement in the future because it's a nice piece of suspense.
I feel you on this. And as someone who has been watching the AFC for a long period of time, this is something that I'm used to with CBS broadcasts. Of all the broadcasts of NFL games, CBS is by far the worst at showing replays. They just, for whatever reason, don't do a good enough job of it. And in this situation...
But this isn't even the replays. It's a programming thing. NFL games this year have started to, when there's a replay challenge, they go to commercial. And I want it to stop right away. We're subjected to constant officiating critiques. Mike Pereira has to chime in and tell you like why the NFL official's job is so hard and what they were seeing here. And Steratore is actually pretty insightful. The guy on Sunday Night Football is the best. And then whoever ESPN has just comes on
John
and repeats,
Perry.
Repeats whatever was said on the field. But we get constant. The one time that's actually interesting and important is when a replay review is taking place and they're under the hood and you get to see the different angles. Like, that's actually interesting. And this year, they've started going to commercial there. I think I know why that is. My theory is that it's because they have a captive audience and advertisers know that people are less likely to leave their TV set or turn channels when that happens. So they've asked for or the broadcast networks are giving them advertising time in a spot where they know people are going to be turned in. The upshot, though, is that the game comes back, a decision's been made that you haven't even heard announced, and then maybe they'll show you why it was made. It's awful from just a consumer perspective. I want to see what happened. I want to anticipate what the decision's going to be, and then I want to react to the decision. And none of that happens because these idiots are going to commercial break when that happens.
I do think there's an easy fix for this, and I do think what it could be is as simple as having a half screen graphic where on one side of the screen you have some sort of advertisement, and maybe the replay angle is not quite as zoomed in as you'd like, but. Why are you paying these NFL referees the amount of money to be a part of the broadcast team when they barely even get to talk? And I feel like with the replay increasing now, the amount that's being used to look at calls that are made, why not pay these guys what they're worth and have them actually, I don't know, opine on these calls that are being looked at? There's a perfect opportunity to do it there. So I'm with you on that front. I would like to think that this is maybe more a CBS problem than it would be on other networks, because I do think the other networks, for whatever reason, are just better at having replay angles. Maybe CBS, compared to the other broadcasts, just doesn't have enough cameras that are out there. But that's something I've always been frustrated with watching a CBS broadcast game, is the lack of replays. Yeah, if you're going away from it entirely, people are just going to go to the bathroom, or they're going to go get themselves another drink during that break as well. And then to come back and be like, oh, there's a big change that happened and I have no idea why. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Change it. Start showing the replay reviews. Don't go to commercial when that happens, or have it sponsored to do something there. The second one is equally important. I have no hope that this will be fixed. We need to eliminate the invisible plane of the goal line. You should have to touch down in the end zone to score a touchdown. No more.
Your feet.
I'm going to jump up. Some part of your body.
Okay.
Some part of the has to actually the ball. It can just be the ball, but the ball has to make contact in the end zone. No more of this. I'm going to jump up and I'm going to take the nose of the football. And boop. Touch the invisible plane. Touchdown. Or, oh, I'm getting launched out of bounds at a diagonal, but I'm going to hold out the football and it's going to cross that invisible. Boop. Got it inside the pylon. Touchdown. I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
I feel you on this, and if we were to go back to where football came from, rugby, in rugby, if I'm not mistaken, you actually have to fall to the ground before You can do the try, Jess. Jess, I know you're much more on
the
rugby
ball
than
has
I
to touch the ground in order to score a try.
Correct.
And you place it down in that spot, and then you kick their version of the PAT, which is called a conversion after that.
From that
from
spot
that
in the
spot
end zone.
Where you put it down. So it actually matters where you cross.
Right.
Where, so, and where you put it down.
So why not have something like that? Get back to your roots. It's NFL 100, baby. Let's go to NFL 150.
Yeah, I would like to see that. Think about all the things you have to do as a catch to make it happen. Like, you have to have control. You have to have 2 feet down or a knee or a butt cheek. You have to maintain possession through the ground, right? Although that's changed. You have to complete the catch. But all you have to do if you're running the ball is just boop, just a little nose of the ball. And people will say, well, what happens when the guy goes soaring out of bounds? Does that become a touchback? No. It's where he last had possession of the ball in the field of play. That's where it goes back to. If he jumped from the three, you get the ball at the three. That's where it is. No more of this. I hate it. I can't take it anymore.
And look, the Packers took advantage of this in the NFC divisional round against the Seahawks, because one of the touchdowns that they scored, I forget which one it was by Aaron Jones, but I remember definitively, like, if the ball got over the goal line, it was maybe, I don't know, 1/16th of the football that got into the end zone. And by in the end zone, over the first part of the line that gets into the end zone.
Yeah. And that part of it, the other problem with that was the guy that signaled touchdown, it was impossible for him to have seen the ball cross the plane.
Fix was like in.
It was impossible. I don't think the fix was in, but I do think that if you go to replay, like, this is why replay will always be imperfect. You go to replay and you see, and it's like, oh, we don't have a conclusive angle. Well, you can conclude that the guy that made the call didn't have a conclusive angle either. So he made a completely jacked up call, yet we don't do anything about that. Finally, if one of the presidential candidates will come out and assert that they will make a move to force Jim Nance and Tony Romo as a tandem to go to ESPN for Monday Night Football, I'm not going to say it would determine my voting, but it probably would go a long way. Those two guys are great. We deserve them on Monday Night Football. Somebody needs to make it happen, whether it's an act of the commissioner, whether it's a congressional resolution. I know that Nance won't ever leave CBS. I know that won't happen.
Got to be with the Masters.
But come on. Like, put Nance and Romo. It's the best commentary. I don't mind Buck and Aikman. I'm fine with them. I love Al and Chris Collinsworth. But Nance and Romo are by far the best pairing going.
Romo's brought a lot out of Nance, too, because Nance used to be exceptionally schmaltzy. And now that there's no Phil Simms that he's just dragging along behind him, getting everything wrong in terms of analysis on the replays, and he actually has someone in Tony Romo who's having fun out there, I think we've actually seen a fun side of Jim Nance since then, which I've very much enjoyed. And I wouldn't mind this, but you know what's going to happen when Tony Romo eventually goes over to ESPN, because I'm sure that's probably the last one. That was probably the last hurrah for Tony Romo, right? He's going to get paid just an absolutely ridiculous amount of money by ESPN. It's going to be Joe Tessitore and Tony Romo. I'd actually sign up for that. I'm intrigued.
Tessitore with Romo?
I'm intrigued by just the sheer hysteria of Romo being goofy and Joe Tessitore turning everything into the Super Bowl, which he'll never get to broadcast.
I would really enjoy it. I would rather have Boog be the play-by-play guy than hear Tessitore one more time in a game. It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring in Brock Heward next for Blue 42, and we're going to ask him why it seems San Francisco's run game is so much more creative than Seattle's. That's ahead.